This is A Mexican Crossing Lines.
Hello, I'm Barack Obama. Everybody log in. Everybody keep on signing on. Everybody log on.
Welcome, folks. This is Cindy Gomez-Shump.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shump.
And you're listening to KPPPLPFM, Fargo-Moorhead. We are adding local color to your airwaves. And today we are here with John Rodenbiker, who is a candidate for the Fargo School Board. And we're talking about online and mobile privacy. It's a big problem. And I brought in an expert so that he can help us out with the ups and downs of what we're hearing. And we're going to cover a couple of other topics, including the FBI seeking to access phones with the San Bernardino shooters, as well as the privacy issues for school children here in Fargo with Google using or keeping the information and selling it or using it. And we will also be talking about the cloud. Is it secure? Is it not? Should I be backing up or not? John is going to help me answer all of these questions today. Thank you for being here, John.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So I heard that congratulations are in order because you are a Fargo candidate for the board, school board, right?
Thank you very much. Yes, I am. Yes.
And what made you want to become a school board member in Fargo?
Probably the biggest reason is that I think the district is in a pretty good place right now. We've had a good administration. We've had a really good school board. And some of those school board members decided even last fall that they're not going to run again.
John, I didn't know about that.
John Strand is not running again.
What?
It's probably the biggest name not returning. And he's had a really great legacy, I think, of being making sure that everything that he's involved in is open, is transparent, is receptive to public input, keeping a tight fist on the checkbook. And I think we're going to miss him in our district. And hopefully I can do something to follow in his footsteps with that. I'm a big fan of public education, and I think that the challenge and the opportunity and the promise of having to take everybody that comes to the district and do our best to turn them into their best selves is amazing. And it's really a foundation of our society. And so those are the bottom line reasons why I'm running for school board.
And do you have a vested interest in that? Because you have some little ones, do you not?
I do. My daughter Elizabeth just turned 10. She's in fourth grade at Claire Barton. Mm-hmm. And my son Jack is 5.5. And he's in kindergarten at Hawthorne.
My kids went to both of those schools for a period of time. By the way, you have beautiful children. But I have to disclose, full disclosure, folks, I do know John Rodenbiker. You used to write for me when I was the editor over at the High Plains Reader. You did some editing for us too as well.
Just a little bit of writing. Yep.
That's kind of how I thought of you. I really hadn't thought of you as the techie guy, but as we became friends on Facebook, I started seeing a lot of nerdy stuff on your Facebook page, and I thought, I know who I'll call.
Yeah, I've spent my career in IT 15 plus years now. The last 10, I've been working at Ide Bailey in their internal information technology department. We do have technology consulting services that we provide to clients, but I work on the inside. That said, everything that I'm going to talk about tonight, just to be clear, is my own opinions, not necessarily those
sure.
of my employer. But
of course.
But I've been there for 10 years in an information security role. I'm their mm-hmm. information security manager right now. And so I do have a lot of experience keeping personal and private data personal and private.
And just to, you know, give a caveat to that, we're talking about what our opinion is on these privacy issues, be they for your kids or for our, you know, community schools or for your phone. And this is in no way like any kind of advice
yeah,
coming from another person.
I am not a lawyer. This right. is not legal advice.
Right. I am a paralegal, but this is not legal advice. Right. This is a Mexican crossing lines.
And it's good to talk about security issues, because I think that the community really isn't educated. You know, we listen to things on the news and the radio, and we're self-taught a lot. But there's so many things we don't understand about security, and a lot of people just don't give a rip. But there's so many things that are going on that really is jeopardizing some basic rights.
Well, the thing that I'm most concerned about right now is the confusion, because with this issue of the phone, and we're going to start there.
All right.
People are confused because there's folks that are saying from the NSA and the FBI that, you know, the victims and the families that are looking for answers, we owe them this information. We owe them every bit of information we can get for them. And so people should be on board with losing a little bit of privacy if that means that we can bring these people to justice.
Sure, that's a very strong emotional argument. But it's a very, in my opinion, a very poor path to follow.
What are the potential dangers here?
The potential dangers are that what the FBI is wanting Apple to provide is a way to get around the limitations of entering passcodes on a phone.
Right.
They need that because on newer iPhones, the storage of that device is encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
So the FBI, they could pull out everything that's in the storage of that, but it's going to be a random garbled mess
mm-hmm.
because they don't have the passcode of the terrorist. They could try and guess the passcode, but after 10 attempts, the iPhone will wipe all of its storage, and then it's lost forever. Additionally, the iPhones have built into them a limitation device so that every time you fail to enter a passcode, it takes a little bit longer to enter the next one. And so even if there wasn't that 10 entry limit, trying all of the various combinations of four digits would take a very, very long time. And so the FBI is asking Apple to develop new software that and load it onto that phone that would remove those limitations. They need Apple to do that because Apple is the only one that has the secret key that can be used to install new software onto iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI could write code if they wanted to that does this, but the iPhone wouldn't accept it. It has mm-hmm. to come from Apple through their formal methods of installing it onto the phone.
But you know, some people are saying, okay, the FBI has asked Apple and other companies to do this kind of thing, and they've done it. They've already given information. What's the big deal? How's this
sure.
different?
Sure, this is different. Apple has not done this before. Apple and other technology companies do comply with lawful warrants. They do provide information that they can. Before iOS 8 and some of these newer devices, so before around 2014 or so, iPhones weren't encrypted this way. They weren't secured this way. And so...
And why is that?
It's...
Technology got better or what?
Yes. Apple saw the growing threat landscape out there. Hackers, attackers, people stealing iPhones. In bigger cities, there was absolutely an epidemic of smartphone thefts. And
there still is.
And there still is. And so Apple also recognized that our smartphones have become really almost unimaginably integrated into our lives. And they really do contain our lives in them. Pictures of our friends, our families, our
Some
lovers.
Some people have pictures on there that they should not have.
Right.
Very private stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Financial information. Who doesn't have notes full of account numbers or use apps to track all of your investments and your checkbook, whether there's anything in there or not to take advantage of. But
I actually use my phone more like a computer.
Sure. And also then all of our communications, all of our letters to people back and forth. And in newer iPhones, they have so much health information in there. Our weights, our... all of our measurements that you would find in any kind of health report are in our phones now. And so if you lose a phone or it's stolen from you, there's a lot in there that if somebody can take out, it could really be damaging to an individual. And so that's why Apple has increasingly, over the whole history of the phone, tried to find new and better ways to secure it. And it was with iOS 8 and that model year's iPhones that they started... encrypting the device using the owner's password and nothing that was provided by Apple. And so that was really the key. Even in 2014, law enforcement was very upset that Apple did that and took themselves completely out of being able to provide any information from that device to the to law enforcement. So that was the trade-off back then, and that's been Apple's thinking. Apple has definitely been on the record in the, especially the past few years, saying, hey, we're not in the business of selling your personal information. We're taking your information and analyzing it and using it to sell advertising to be displayed to you. They're in the business of selling you devices, laptops, smartphones, TV attached devices. Mm-hmm. And that's where they make their money. And all these other services, all these other software things are there to make their devices more attractive. And so I do believe, a lot of people have been saying this is a cynical move on Apple, just trying to bolster their marketing and their stock price. And I would say that's maybe true, but because that's their moral philosophy is that, hey, we don't want to know your information. We don't want to have access to it. We want you to have access to your information and know that it's secure and that it's your information. And so we're going to do what we can as Apple to keep ourselves completely out of that loop. You see the same thing with their iMessaging system, where their alternative to traditional SMS texts, where that is all encrypted end to end. And so law enforcement can ask for logs from Apple, and all Apple can provide them is a log saying, well, it tried to connect a FaceTime call or chat, but or a messaging chat, they use the same back end. But it's all encrypted. We can't provide you anything except for this random gobbledygook.
You know, the FBI has really had a problem with the encryption for a long time.
They have.
You know, I remember way back in the day, there's a pretty good privacy. That was an encryption program that someone developed, and they went after the guy. I mean, they thought he was harming national security.
Absolutely. This whole conversation about this is just history repeating itself.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
In the 90s, the clipper chip debate, and as the internet and as American tech companies became an economic force, and politicians realized that, hey, if we don't allow them to encrypt this stuff, then we're really losing business to the rest of the world, and there's going to be somebody from Europe or China or Japan that's going to be developing these services, and we're going to be left in the dust. Back in those days, encryption, and it still is technically regulated as a munition.
And
wow. My goodness.
Yeah, the same laws that applied to trying to sell guns or jets or tanks across borders applied to strong encryption.
What? Wow. This sounds like an Onion article. For those that are just tuning in, you are listening to John Rodenbiker, who is a good friend, and also he is a current candidate for the Fargo School Board. We're talking tech and privacy on a Mexican crossing lines. And of course, we want to hear from the techies out there. How do you fall on this issue? Do you think that this is a good move by the FBI, or is Apple right to stand up to them? Are they just looking for their stock prices to go up? Is this a ploy? I want to hear from you guys.
That's right. You can contact us many ways. One way to contact us is you can call our message line at 701-566-0917. Just leave a message. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, where you live. We may use it on the air. Or you just want to give us some advice or give us a message, we'll listen to it. You can also tweet us at media_PPP, email Cindy at kpppfm.com, and me, Duke, kpppfm.com.
And would you like to give folks a way of contacting you if they have questions or comments for you after the show?
Absolutely. Probably the best way to get a hold of me right now is on Facebook. It's been a great platform for people to reach out to me, as I've been running for a school board, and that's just facebook.com/Rodenbiker for Fargo. RODENBIKER, Rodenbiker, just like it sounds. FORFARGO.
I've been saying it wrong the whole time.
Well,
you know,
fine.
That happens.
Close enough. You got
it. Yeah. Rodenbiker. It will always come off of the lips from now on that way. And, you know, this whole FBI thing, I want you to tell me what your prediction is, how it's going to go down.
Ooh, that's a tough speculation. I believe...
How would you like it to go down, maybe, is a better question.
What I would like to happen is what Apple's been asking the FBI to do, and that is to withdraw the request.
What do you think will happen if they do not withdraw and they're forced to actually build this?
So here's the problem with what the FBI is asking for. What they're saying is, hey, just do this once for this one phone. Right. There's two things about that. One, if this is subject to the standards of discovery and evidence handling, from what I understand. And again, I'm not a forensics expert. I'm a general security expert. And so I don't do a whole lot of forensics, and I don't have to do a whole lot with smartphones and delivering them to law enforcement, though we do handle e-discovery issues at Ide Bailey, of course. What they're asking Apple to create is an instrument, which is a technical term. It's a tool. And so for that tool to be accepted by a court of law, there are a ton of standards under the federal rules of procedure and handling evidence. And so Apple is basically going to have to build like a small little mini business software development shop to build this tool, support it, somebody would have to do peer review on it for it to be accepted by the court to prove that it's doing what it's doing,
this
what it says
like
it does.
It's a huge burden to put onto Apple.
It's exactly what it is. And that's what Apple is saying. This is an unreasonable burden to create. They basically have to create an entire new version of iOS that and support it that is excluding these security controls. The second thing is that there's really no way to limit it to this one device. All iPhones do have a universally unique identifier, a UUID, that represents each one individually. And so you could maybe try and code something into the software that tries to limit it to that. But all anybody who gets access to that code has to do is change that to whatever other device they want, or ignore it completely and say, hey, whatever iPhone I have, I can load the software onto. And now there are no limitations on how many times you can try and guess the password.
Well, what, as a consumer, you know, for the people out there that don't have your technology background, that they just want to know what's the right thing to do. First of all, should I be in favor of my government being able to have this tool or not? Is that going to somehow put my privacy into jeopardy?
The bottom line question, you have to ask yourself is, what do I put into my phone? What would I not want people to see in there?
Everything. I don't think anybody should look at anything that I do.
Right, exactly. We have a Fourth Amendment for a reason, to be secure in our persons and our papers, and mm-hmm. that applies as well to our electronic devices that contain those things, that information. So I think people should value their privacy. You need to value your security, and you need to be able to, you need to feel secure. You need to feel that, hey, if I'm going to use this device, if I'm going to put the stuff into here, I want to know that it's going to be okay and that I'm not going to lose it.
There's a bunch of people out there that go, I've heard this argument, and they say, hey, you really can't protect, everything's out there. You can't protect your privacy anymore. If somebody wants to get your information, they can get it without getting to your phone. Don't kid yourself.
I reject that argument. There's plenty out there that people don't know about me that I maybe don't want people to know. And everybody has that. It's a fundamental right to privacy. And this debate's happened before. It's going to happen again. And if you aren't, if you haven't been convinced at this point, I don't know how to convince you personally.
Right.
But I do hold it very deeply that people do have a right to privacy.
Even kids
to a certain extent. And you know,
this has been something they've been talking about here with the privacy of the students in the high schools or in the schools and Google having their information.
Absolutely.
You did hear about that, right?
Yes. Yes. That was on the news a little while ago, locally. It was an issue that was brought up back in early December. The Electronic Frontier Foundation filed a formal complaint against Google to the FTC, alleging that Google is mishandling students' information who are using the Google for Education product.
I always suspected that Google was getting too powerful. Am I right?
Well, Google's business model is to sell advertising to companies that's being displayed to end users.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Google makes their money. And their business is to look at how you're using their products, what you're searching for, what your email messages contain, what locations you're looking for on Google Maps, and then displaying advertising to you based on that. And that's valuable for marketers because, hey, why would I want to waste selling advertising to somebody for a car who has no interest in buying a car?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can go back and forth on that, but that's their fundamental business. And so what the complaint from the Electronic Frontier Foundation was is not that they were taking the information in the Google for Education product that is covered by various laws, various contracts, various promises saying, hey, we're not going to misuse this. The allegation is that when a student uses their Google ID for those Google for Education products and then go and use a Google service that is not in Google for Education, then Google starts tracking them and tracking how that product is being used. So the Google for Education product is mostly like a word processor, a spreadsheet, some presentation software, a special search engine, and I think they call it Classroom, kind of a chat forum where students and teachers can interact and get lessons and that sort of thing. But as soon as you step out of that into the other Google products, using that account, then Google can start analyzing what you're doing.
Well, I think a lot of parents out there, when they were watching this, I mean, at least the people that I was looking at on social media talking about it, really didn't know what to opine. It was like they didn't know enough about whether or not this was a real threat to their kids.
Yeah, you don't. It was good. You know, the whole news segment, I think, was prompted by a parent asking, hey, my kid's bringing home this Google thing. Is it secure? How do I know?
Is my kid safe?
Right, exactly.
So what would you tell parents out there that are worried about this?
And so, you know, the thing to be worried about then is that it's Google using their information maybe a little bit inappropriately. It's not that your child's information is being leaked onto the internet.
Okay.
It's not that, you know, any random person in the entire world can somehow log into Google and find out that your kid's going to school in Fargo Public Schools.
Okay.
For instance. It's a relatively, I don't know, it's an issue. Is it something to panic about? Is it something to keep your kids from using a Chromebook? No, I don't think so.
Okay. So it's not like this thing that we should all be freaking out about, but it is right. a privacy issue.
It is. It is a privacy issue.
I'm sure that there yes. are things that are going on within the Fargo public school system that are much more important that we deal with right now mm-hmm. than that issue.
Absolutely.
Am I right?
Absolutely. Like absolutely. What? There's a whole number of things. Tonight, the district is meeting with a new task force of parents, teachers, and community members that are starting to talk about what are we spending our money on in the district? Does it match our strategic plan? Does it match our long-term facilities plan? Is this what the community wants us to be spending money on? A couple of years ago, the legislature in North Dakota passed a law saying, hey, if you're using more than 70 mils of revenue from your local property taxes, you need to stop, or you need to get approval from your district's residents. Fargo had a special election, and the residents of Fargo rejected that. And so we're coming up on, right now, the district's using 139 mils, wow. which I don't want to try and explain mm-hmm. mils and property mm-hmm. taxes yeah. tonight, because
please
then we'll...
Please don't.
definitely not.
It is a little confusing.
This is supposed to be a fun show, John.
Excuse me. Yeah, so anyway, it's so the district's revenue is kind of locked in right now.
Okay.
And so if we can always go back, the district can always go back to the public and say, hey, listen, we really do need more money and here's why. Or maybe they say, hey, the district residents already spoke and they said, no, you don't get any more money. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, that's what the task force task is to figure that out and to go out to the community and ask them, what are we spending money on? Does the community like this? There was a great letter in today's Fargo Forum from some humanities teachers and foreign language teachers in the Fargo Public School District.
Oh, I missed it.
That said, hey, it's a crying shame that Concordia is cutting these programs. We understand that things need to be cut, but for crying out loud, it's a liberal arts school and you're cutting the humanities.
Ouch.
Yeah. And Fargo has a long history of supporting the humanities, supporting mm-hmm. the arts in Fargo Public School District.
Yeah.
I mean, Trollwood is a magnificent program.
Right.
Claire Barton has the Creative Arts Studio in it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely astounding. All the high schools have great art and theater departments. And it's in the strategic plan right now that we're not just going to focus on STEM. We're going to focus on STEAM and include the arts in all of those disciplines.
I like that.
Yeah.
STEAM, not STEM.
Exactly. Exactly. I like it a lot too. It's really catchy. And so that's one of the probably the biggest issue I think right now that's facing the community and facing the district is, do you like what Fargo Public Schools are doing? I think Fargo Public Schools graduates amazing kids, ready to take on the world. But if our district residents have decided that, no, I think you're doing too much. I think, yeah, you know, the arts, humanities, who needs to learn German in high school? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. who needs to read, you know, more books from dead old white guys, you know, yeah. from Europe, whatever. I guess then we have to listen to the community. But that's probably the number one issue I think facing the district.
Well, it sounds like you are very, you know, you're listening to the people and you really seem to care passionately about the public education system in Fargo. And we're gonna ask you a bunch of more questions when we come back from this musical break. You've been listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines. I'm here to ask the tough questions. This is Cindy Gomez-Shump.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shump.
And you're on KPPP LPFM 88.1 Fargo Moorhead. We're adding local color to your airwaves. We'll be right back after this from, who is it?
Rockwell. Somebody watching me.
Watching me. Thank you.
Hey, we're back, and this is A Mexican Crossing Lines. You're listening to a show about mobile and online privacy with my special guest, John Rodenbiker. And he is a current candidate for the Fargo Public School Board. Thank you for being on the show and helping us out.
Thanks again for having me. It's a lot of fun.
This is a very interesting conversation, and I wanted to have an expert that knows what they're talking about, that does work in privacy and security matters because, well, I'm not really a techie, for one. My brother Raul really, really is. And he has conversations about this with me all the time, and he tries to break it down. And I really appreciate that because sometimes I think folks don't understand, or because of the wording of this stuff, It's like it's too much for the lay people to take. And as much as I want to care about it, I can't understand it, so I can't care. Mm-hmm. And I think that this privacy issue is really important to talk about because it can be a slippery slope. I remember after 9/11, the heightened fear that people had. And I'm be honest with you. I was one of the people that was saying, I don't care if they have to strip search me every time I get onto a plane. I don't want another plane to go down. Now, I don't feel that sure, way now. But right. At the time, I was really, it was a jarring thing.
Absolutely. I remember right after 9/11, my wife and I were trying to go on our honeymoon, and I was incensed in the way that they were trying to, make sure that the plane was secure by invasively searching us. Mm-hmm. They ransacked bags, our luggage. And I was like, okay, this is such an extreme overreaction.
Mm-hmm.
Look at us, two young white people from Minot, North Dakota, flying on a little regional jet. I mean,
how dangerous could this possibly be?
In the world, everybody has lost their minds, and we still live with that today. Mm-hmm. We're still taking our shoes off at the airport.
Yeah.
I think that's insane. Yeah. And it's the technical term is security theater, and it really does nothing except for make people feel better.
Yeah.
Feel that, oh, good, I can see that something is happening.
Well, no, it's also made me late for a couple of flights.
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't feel any more secure on an airplane when I see them do that sort of stuff. And I remember when someone leaked the NSA's or TSA's kind of their rule book, their procedures and policies.
Right.
And there was things in there that, you could film them and they would say, don't film me. But they say it three times and they actually can't stop you. And so people started actually kind of reverse engineering what happens when they go through the lines. But you're in these big lines and stuff, and they put you through that stuff, and it's like I don't feel any more secure by the things that they do.
Right. I had a small package of razor blades taken from me the last time I went through. It's like, to shave.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, what?
Yeah. Weird things that they take from people are, and like, but what happened as a result of that and how they were able to pass the Patriot Act and all of the different things that resulted in and how that affected privacy, it makes me a little scared of this whole situation with the request from the government in the San Bernardino shooting. And I have a lot of lawyer friends. I told you I was a paralegal in my past life. And we've debated online because I said, remember what happened after 9/11 and the Patriot Act, everybody? And I said, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theory nut person, but I have seen too many cases in our country's history of us saying we have to do this because weapons of mass destruction and such and so, and it being false and it being used as an excuse that ends up taking us into war or weakening our laws or creating freedoms for our government that infringe upon our privacy. Am I crazy? What is the
no? You're absolutely
right.
What's
the safe line in terms of how much we should give up of our privacy rights?
You're absolutely right. Fundamentally, I believe that we have to allow these technology companies, for the sake of our privacy, for the sake of our overall security, we have to make those products as secure as possible. We have to. Otherwise, what's even the point?
Mm-hmm.
And then we let good detectives and good law enforcement agents do their job. It's a hard job, but that's their job to figure out everything else. One iPhone. This is that they're trying to get access to. That almost everybody that I've read, who I respect, has said has almost absolutely no information on it that would be useful at this point. The FBI has access to those iCloud backups from that phone, which unfortunately aren't secured the same way that the storage of the devices are.
I need to talk to you about that because I did not know anything about that until I saw that on your Facebook page. And I was like, I knew it. There's something fishy about that iCloud.
Right. So the thing with the iCloud backups, you're on iPhones, you can have your phone back up everything on it up into Apple's cloud, just like you could onto your local computer through iTunes. On iTunes, it's encrypted with your passcode on your local computer. For whatever reason, when it's backed up to the cloud right now, Apple does not encrypt that the same way. So if somebody
Why is that?
You know, I don't know. That's a question for Apple. And I think it's just a, you know, kind of like a product management, you know, something that they didn't think about until now. I would not be surprised if in the next few months or the next big Apple keynote, they say, oh, by the way, if somebody steals your Apple ID and gets access to your iCloud, all of that, all of your iPhone backups are still encrypted with your iPhone password. And so that's why I say, unfortunately, the iCloud was not encrypted, because that applies to everybody who uses iCloud to back up their iPhones. If somebody steals your Apple ID and can get your password somehow, whether they guess it, or you wrote it down someplace, or
we found it,
or who knows, you know, they can have access to everything that is also on your iPhone.
Yikes.
Yeah, so hopefully Apple changes that quickly. Now the balance there, the risk management analysis you have to put into that is
if I lose
my phone.
I know, ugh. It's so scary.
Yeah. And so what are the odds? What's the probability?
You're more
likely going to
lose your phone.
Or destroy it.
I lose it every day, at least once.
Right, exactly. You know, most of us aren't terrorists. Most of us are not going to be subject to law enforcement warrants. And so
I don't know.
Most of us are probably going to drop our phone. Most of us are probably going to lose it at some point.
But you know,
and so I would still personally recommend that you do back up your phone.
I'm very paranoid because, like, as a person of color, I know that when violations occur, they sometimes disproportionately affect people of color. And you know, I've been thinking about it. It is Black History Month.
Oh yeah.
And I've been watching all of this stuff. I just watched that PBS special on the vanguard of the revolution, the Black Panther Party, the new Independent Lens film they put out.
Sure.
And they talked about COINTELPRO and how the government specifically investigated these groups that were doing organizing. And so I think about what that means in terms of people trying to fight. And we've seen it even recently. I think at the Republican National Conventions that were held here in Minneapolis in 90s. I can't remember exactly. No 2000 and early 2000s.
Yeah, sure.
They had a whole infiltrated a group with the government and set them up and arrested them. So I'm the sort of person that when I heard recently that Samsung put out a television that listens to you and watches you, I was like,
watch out,
everybody. It is creepy.
I do have to say, since you probably can't see me on the radio, I am white. I'm white.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
that's right.
Middle-aged white guy who's definitely middle class, so I have a very different experience that
I know, but I'm a Mexican crossing lines, so I need to get this information. You need to break it down for me, John.
Absolutely.
And the Mexicans out there that are like, we're scared. We don't even answer our doors. That's how scared we are. You know?
Okay.
We're like, okay, I don't trust the man. I don't trust the man. So this is what I need to understand that. I'm also terrified of losing all my information. What is the best way for me to protect myself? Because I'll be honest with you, I've had the cloud on my phone and I haven't backed up.
Yeah, that's a great question. There is an organization called the Electronic Frontier Foundation who has a very, very long and respected history of fighting for everyone's rights online with technology, privacy, security, the right to own our device and be able to modify our device since mm-hmm. it's ours and in our possession. I respect them very much, and I've been a active member of theirs for years. They have a great guide. They just refreshed it just a little while ago. It's called Surveillance Self-Defense. You can get their ssd.eff.org. And they, I think, do a really good job of breaking it down, breaking all the issues down, breaking it down into ways that makes it a little bit easier to think about. And they introduce people to threat assessments. It's just five easy questions that they recommend that you really think about. So what do you want to protect? Mm-hmm. What do you want to protect it from? So are you concerned about the data on your phone being safe from being dropped in the toilet?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that.
Or are you concerned about a nation state trying to withdraw the information from that?
Definitely the first one.
Right?
Because that's actually happened to me.
Yeah. And so how likely is it that you're going to need that protection? It's probably pretty likely that we're going to drop our phone or lose it. Or it's going to just get old and die on us. And, oh, shoot, I forgot that I needed a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are the consequences if you fail at that protection? So if you have a nation state coming after you, yeah, it's probably bad. But if you drop your phone and it breaks and you don't have, you know,
all the
information on there. Yeah.
Because I've had that too. And then like,
yeah,
a bad update
on it or something, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, who knows? So mm-hmm. They also have then different. So they have they introduced the threat assessment, and then they have guides for, say, you're a journalist and you might be covering something a little controversial, or mm-hmm, you want to protect your sources. How do you do that? What kind of technology, what kind of tools, what kind of software, what should you be thinking about to enable that? They also have guides for LGBT youth so that they can reach out to a community so they can avoid online harassment.
Cool.
And talk in a, you know, open and friendly way without having to worry about that. And anybody else in like a protected class like that. Guides for protesters. If you want to, so if you want to protest your government, whether you're in the United States or anywhere around the world, how do you do that in a safe way that doesn't mm-hmm. put you at more risk, that doesn't put your friends and family at enhanced risk? So I definitely recommend going out there and checking that resource out.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
I really want to check that out mm-hmm. too. We do a lot of training with the People's Press Project, which mm-hmm. is the nonprofit that acquired the station for the community. And we try to help people learn the facts on how they can film in public, and especially when they're filming public officials or police,
yeah.
And how to do it safely, like how to follow the law. One of the things that we always tell folks is that they should have their phones password protected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely password protect your phone.
I was surprised that so many people don't.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a convenience thing. On a lot of the higher end smartphones now, they have the fingerprint scanner.
Yeah.
That makes it a lot easier to have that strong password and then get into it.
You've been watching me play with this stupid thing. It doesn't work very much, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the 4-digit PIN is dead. There's very, very little security there.
Mm-hmm.
At least 6-digit alphanumeric on your phones mm-hmm. and in general. Right now, the Department of Defense, on their computers that they deploy, they have a 14-character minimum.
Holy, that's a lot.
The IRS last fall started issuing security guidance to its tax preparers, and it's I think since been redacted, but in the first draft of their first tip, they said, hey, your passwords need to be at least 12 to 16 characters long anymore.
And didn't they just get hacked? They did. Just got hacked like last week, didn't they?
They did. They had some serious breaches. And that's kind of, you know, a lot of it is in informing tax preparers on how to be safe mm-hmm. and handle the information appropriately.
In fact, I heard last week that there have been so many there's this whole thing where people pay ransom, they have to pay a ransom to not have their stuff disappear.
Yes.
And a lot of it, granted, is from people that are developing the software and selling it and then not getting paid, or, you know, they have some beef with the people that they...
Yeah, and that goes back to, again, having good backups, that you're making sure you're not backing up encrypted information, the negatively encrypted information. So having strong passwords is really important. I do think that the iPhone platform is probably the most secure computing platform out there right now. So if you were concerned about nothing except having the most secure computing platform, I would get the latest iPhone, use a strong password on it, keep it up to date, and then consider the backup situation, whether you're going to try and back it up to a computer or to the cloud, or if you're really, really paranoid, then not backing it up and taking that risk.
Yeah.
That said, that's probably not a reasonable solution for most people. And so then it again goes back to analyzing your own needs, figuring that out.
Very good point.
Well, you know, with these security issues, obviously I want to learn more about them, which is why I invited you here. And I'd like folks that are listening to care about these issues, because I think that even if you haven't been affected by a security breach or a situation where you've had to defend your privacy, it is a major problem that we all have to think about in this country, especially as we see the NSA and the federal government encroaching on so many areas of our digital privacy. And I'm talking about specifically online stuff today, mobile and online stuff. And we've actually spent a lot of time talking about stuff on the phone, privacy on your phone.
Sure.
But there are a lot of privacy issues having to do with their use of our computers. And you were talking about, you know, the difference between the cloud and how having stuff at your house, like having everything on site, gives you more protection. That has a lot to do with the fact that it's like your physical property in your house, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So whether you have your information in the cloud or in your house, if law enforcement gets a warrant, you have to turn it over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference is that you may or may not become aware that your information has been subject to a warrant if it's not in your physical possession. So if I have a server in my house that has my email on it, that has, you know, that I use to access the internet, and everything goes through there, then when I'm served with a warrant, they got to come to my house, and I'll know that I've been served with a warrant, and turn it over, and then it's subject to all the other protections we have in our legal system.
Mm-hmm.
If it's up in the cloud, does your cloud provider have a end-user notification policy, and do they follow it? Apple does. They have a very strong and good document that they call their legal process guidelines. And so if FBI or any law enforcement agency goes to Apple and says, hey, I want this information, Apple says, well, here's our document. Here's what you can get from us. Here's what we need to see from you in return. And in most cases, it's a search warrant with signed by a judge. Facebook has something similar. Microsoft's cloud services has something similar. Google has something similar.
Why do I have this feeling? Am I wrong, first of all, that Facebook gives a lot more information to law enforcement and has a lot more involvement with giving information to law enforcement than Apple? It seems to me like they do. I've read a lot more about it.
Well, I will say that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, came out today strongly supporting Apple and their position.
Okay.
And they also have a strong guidance for law enforcement, and they don't turn anything over unless they get the warrant. And,
okay.
They have policies on end user notification.
Okay. As Apple's?
I would have to take a closer look at them. I'm not comfortable necessarily saying that. But the thing about Facebook is that they have, you know, it's a communications platform.
Right.
Where what is in Apple's stuff is not necessarily, you know, those talks, those communications, doesn't have that same feeling of, hey, if the government gets this, they know everybody else who I've been talking to mm-hmm. necessarily. There's still the, you know, Apple, they can get their text messages. They know who you've been. Maybe if you've been using Apple's email service, they know who you've been emailing back and forth with. Whereas Facebook has, well, if anybody has used Facebook, you know, they have all those messages, all those likes and friends. And I think maybe that's why it gets a little bit more focus placed on it.
Yeah, the ISPs also have been something over the years that have kind of, you know, leaned over backwards to help out law enforcement, even without the warrants. You know, they just go to the internet service provider and they get information and log files. And I like the idea that you would be notified if someone's in there grabbing your information and forcing the company to give it to you, you should be notified that that's happening.
Right, right. And that's for a long time in kind of the hacker underground, and this is kind of using mm-hmm. the old-fashioned term hacker, this people that were using computers trying to figure them out,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You know, there was that sense that, hey, a lot of times the government doesn't like, or whoever is the owner of this, or not the owner, the manufacturer of this computer doesn't like what I'm trying to do with it. And so kind of similar to what you were talking about, you know, in the colored community,
mm-hmm.
being worried about, hey, we're targets. Mm-hmm. The hacker community was targets. And so for a long time, it was just standard operating procedure that, hey, if I want to serve up a website, if I want to have email, I'm going to do that all through my own computers and my own residence.
Yeah.
For that little bit of extra protection that, hey, mm-hmm. I know that they're here. I know that
mm-hmm.
If they try and come and get them, that I will know then mm-hmm. and I'll have maybe a little bit more protections. The cloud, the internet is just so dang convenient mm-hmm. that's pretty much gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
Pretty much gone by the wayside.
Plus, those of us have hardware failures, you know, I've had backups and hard drives die, and it's like it's nowhere, you know, the stuff is gone.
Exactly.
Never to be found again.
Exactly.
And
so that's why,
just cry.
You know, I've done a lot of, met a lot of people that are working in downtown Fargo now. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool community.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of startups, lots of, you know, people just getting together trying to make things happen.
Yeah.
And none of these new little companies have IT staff. Mm-hmm. None of them have a data center anywhere. They all have their own laptops they've brought in. They have their smartphones and they're all using cloud services.
Yep.
Because it cuts out all that cost, all that hassle of, oh, geez, are we backing this stuff up? Well, I don't know. Google's doing that.
but, you know? but as you have pointed out, this does leave them kind of open with their cloud service in terms of security.
It does. And so hopefully these companies reach a point of maturity where they start thinking more about that of, ooh, where is our data? Who has access to it?
They need to find a tech consultant. That's what I think.
Yep.
But that can't be you because you're running for the school board. So,
right.
But, you know, the other thing that I'm concerned with the San Bernardino thing is, it seems to me that they legally don't really need it. So,
I have that feeling as well.
Okay, but we can't prove that one way or another. So
right.
this is my conjecture, right? I believe they don't really need this thing they're asking Apple to do. And if I'm right, going on my conjecture, that would mean that there's a possibility that they're using this as an excuse to get this tool. So it's a little bit more evil, you know, like they're like, oh, this is a great opportunity because there's a bunch of dead people. So they're going to feel guilty and they're going to want us to, you know, find bad guys.
In my opinion, it's absolutely cynical.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is why I called you here, John.
And I think I saw Pew had a poll today that said 51% of Americans think that Apple should turn this over to the FBI.
I know. And 38% stand with Apple. Yeah. And I thought,
right.
I don't believe that.
But I can understand it because of the emotional appeal and people don't know. And they're like, it's a phone app. It's at your phone, Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you stonewalling the FBI? And it's a complicated issue that
I don't even trust polls anymore. That's how skeptical I am.
We've just spent an hour now almost talking about all of the issues around it. So it's tough. But my point I was getting to is that if you surveyed technology folks, security professionals, you know, digital forensics professionals, I would be amazed if under 90% said Apple is absolutely in the right here, that our government is way overstepping what is necessary or appropriate. China has all kinds of requirements for technology companies that do business in its state. They've never asked for anything like this.
And that's China.
Wow.
That should give us pause. Mm-hmm. Well, see, this is exactly why I needed somebody with your background to explain it to me, and hope that in the future you will come back. If I have more questions, we have to have you back. I mean, the
tech talk, you know.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, John is not just a techie nerd. Mm-hmm. You're not, are you? There's a lot of things you're very passionate about.
Absolutely.
And we'll have to have you back for technical questions, but we should sit and have a conversation about politics sometime too.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'd love that.
That would be fun.
Absolutely.
I'm having another friend of mine come over later this week and talk politics with me. And I know she's been doing canvassing for a particular candidate, which I will not mention. And I know she's been following the discussions amongst Democrats in this election. And I have a complete disdain at this point for all things political. So I need to bring someone else in to motivate me to have this discussion, because I just can't even stomach it anymore. But you have a very interesting perspective on that too. And I'd love to have you back if you'd...
This has been great. I'd love to be back.
Mm-hmm. And again, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they send you an email or ask you a question?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me right now is through Facebook, of all places, facebook.com/rodentbiker4Fargo.
And that explains your platform for school board and everything, so people want to
check
you out.
And you can message me. Facebook messaging is actually pretty secure. Mm-hmm. It's, again, that's all encrypted end-to-end.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, it's a nice little platform. And so that's RodenBiker, Rodenbiker, FORFARGO. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And thank you very much for coming, breaking all this stuff down for us and explaining what the voice of wisdom is on the issues of how do we best protect our privacy, not just here in our community, but in the entire country. So you heard it here, folks, on Mexican Crossing Lines. I break it down for you so you don't have to. Today, we're talking mobile and online privacy. I hope you guys tune in next time. You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, adding local color to your airwaves. Duke, what are you going to take us out with?
We're going to listen to a song by Sheldon Allman. It's called Big Brother is Watching You.
Be careful of what you say. Be careful in every way. Be careful of what you do. Big Brother is watching you. Be circumspect and discreet. Stay light on your mental feet. One slip and you know you're through. Big Brother is watching you. Conform with all directives. Remember, obedience pays. And when you watch that TV screen, remember it works both ways. You'll disappear in a wink unless you can double think. You'll vanish into the blue. Big Brother is watching you. Watching you. Big Brother is watching you. Conform with all directives. Remember, obedience pays. And when you watch that TV screen, remember it works both ways. Disappear in a wink unless you can double think. You'll vanish into the blue. Big Brother is watching you. Big
Brother is watching you. Big Brother is watching you. Big Brother is watching you.